This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
This episode is also brought to you by Oddmo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
And if it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The city of Canby is seeking input on a planned 3.3-mile extension to its popular logging road trail, which follows the historic Mulalla Forest Road connecting Canby and Mulalla. Earlier this year, the city's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee secured a $35,000 grant from Clackamas County Tourism and Cultural Affairs to create a plan for trail improvements along the Traverso section of the MFR. The project will explore trail ideas along the Traverso section of the MFR and lay the groundwork for future design and construction work, the city said in a press release on Monday. Trail improvements on the Traverso section would provide a scenic and historic trail for residents to walk, bike, or ride horses, city officials said in a release. The pathway would also improve local access to the Mulalla River. The future trail will be a major asset for the community, providing a new and unique recreation opportunity. A master plan exists for the development of the MFR, one first championed in 1994 by Congressman Kurt Schrader, who was a state representative at the time. The earlier plans ran into trouble with lands that were privately owned and being used commercially. One of these major barriers was removed in December 2017 by the Traverso family's generous donation of 81.4 acres of land, including a sizable portion of the Mulalla Forest Road Trail. If fully developed, the Traverso donation would effectively double the existing Mulalla River Forest Trail, which currently terminates at 13th Avenue. The Traverso addition would extend the trail all the way to Maxburg Road. City officials have acknowledged resistance to the plan, with one councilor describing it as controversial, particularly among neighboring property owners who do not want to see the trail developed or open up for public use out of fear it would attract transients and other crime. I think I can sum up their arguments by saying, no, we don't want anything to change out there, Councilor Greg Parker, the city's liaison to the Bike and Pedestrian Committee, said at a city council meeting earlier this year. Respecting private property owners and their needs along the route is a key priority, the city's press release said this week. This project will engage residents, property owners, and businesses to create a community-supported pathway concept, the city said. Public participation is critical to the development of a community-supported plan. The city is also hosting an online open house to share information and gather feedback on the project from the general public. Find out more on the project webpage, www.mfrtrail.org. As some of Oregon's frontline health workers prepare to receive their first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine Wednesday morning. State health officials on Tuesday reported a single-day record of 54 new deaths due to the virus, followed by 48 new deaths on Wednesday. Oregon's death toll now stands at 1,262 people. The previous record for COVID-19 deaths in Oregon was 36, which was set on December 8th. Today's record high deaths toll tragically reminds us that the pandemic is far from over, despite the arrival of vaccines in Oregon, said Patrick Allen, director of Oregon Health Authority. These Oregonians and the ones who passed before them were loved ones who will be dearly missed by their families, for whom we express our sincerest condolences. The rising case count that surged in November is one factor attributed to the record high death counts, according to the state health officials. Even as the vaccine is gradually proliferated throughout the population, state officials urge Oregonians to continue to follow the now standard public health guidance, wear a mask, wash your hands, avoid large gatherings, and maintain your distance from those outside your household. If you start to have symptoms, even mild ones, consult a medical provider quickly to get instructions on how to care for yourself and your household members, and also whether to get tested, OHA said in a release. And finally, if you get a call from public health, answer it and take their advice on how to protect yourself and those around you. We know this news can be disheartening. It's okay to ask for help. COVID-19 has changed our lives, and it can feel difficult for anyone. Local mental and emotional health resources for support can be found at safestrongoregon.org or by calling 1-800-923-HELP. That's 1-800-923-4357. The line offers free 24/7 emotional support and resource referral to anyone who needs it, not only those experiencing a mental health crisis. Two men were arrested in Oregon City this week in relation to a controlled substance investigation by police. On Sunday, officers with the Oregon City Police Department were involved in a drug investigation in the area of McLaughlin Boulevard and South 2nd Street near the Willamette Falls Locks. During the investigation, officers arrested 24-year-old Ryan Garceau for distribution of a controlled substance after he came to the area and delivered methamphetamine, OCPD said on a Facebook post Wednesday. The next day, officers also arrested 45-year-old Anthony Edgarly for distribution of a controlled substance in relation to the same investigation. Garceau and Edgarly were both lodged at the Clackamas County Jail on charges of distribution of a controlled substance. If you walked into Gwen's Coffee House at the right time in December, you'll see a Christmas tree decked out with lights and a very unusual type of ornament. Rather than the usual balls and babbles, this tree is covered in more than 100 tags, each with a number, gender, and age. It's the Can Be Now Giving Tree, and despite being one of the community's newer holiday traditions, it's something that brings joy to dozens of families and children in need each year. Lisa Lear, founder and administrator of the Can Be Now Facebook group, which boasts over 21,000 members, said she started the Giving Tree in 2014, the same year as Can Be Now. Her reasoning was very simple and very personal. I received help from the Giving Tree when my kids were little, she tells the Can Be Current. Kids are my soul and heart, and without the help of others, my kids would have had a few bleak Christmases. It started with a single family and five children who reached out to her that first year. She posted the need in Can Be Now, and the response was overwhelming. I think each child in that family got about 12 to 15 gifts each that year, she says. The second year, the Giving Tree grew to 50 children, then doubled again the following year. She kept it at 100 for a few years until 2020, when, not surprisingly, things just kind of snowballed. I had some last minute additions because I can't say no, and we are helping 143 kids from 55 families, Lear said. Despite the higher numbers and higher need, the generosity of the Canby community was on full display. The tags flew off the tree in only 8 days. Usually it takes a good 2 weeks to get rid of all the tags, Lear says. Once the gifts are received back, they are hand-wrapped by Lear and other volunteers. The number of kids are eye-popping on their own, of course. But when you account for the fact that each child gets at least 3 or 4 gifts, it really adds up exponentially. Over 500 gifts, Lear says. I normally do a wrapping party at the library with about 15 people who come and help me wrap gifts. It takes about 5 hours to do it all, set up, wrap, and tear it down. It takes about 3 hours to do the actual wrapping. Because of coronavirus restrictions, things are a little different this year. Lear has enlisted the help of her 3 boys, as well as 2 friends. The 6 of us are going to wrap them all. I figure it'll take us 2 days, she says with a laugh. The coronavirus pandemic may have canceled or significantly modified many of Canby's beloved holiday events and traditions, but it just can't stop Christmas. The community's generous spirit has continued to be revealed throughout the spirit of giving, with another example on Wednesday. The Canby Center, in partnership with local churches, brought over 400 gifts into 4 neighborhoods that night as part of the Christmas parade that aimed to spread joy and holiday spirit across Canby. We're celebrating the birth of Jesus because, as the angels said at that time, we bring you good tidings of great joy, Canby Center Executive Director Ray Keane said. Christmas music, warm smiles, and gifts for your family. Santa is even joining us in the Canby Center van, so you don't want to miss the chance to meet him. This time of year, the Christian-based nonprofit service organization would typically be gearing up for its annual Christmas dinner, but had to forgo that tradition due to the pandemic. But we did not want to cancel Christmas, Keane said. We feel it was important to bring Christmas out to Canby in a physically distanced, safe manner. So that's what we're doing. The gifts were put together in partnership with local churches, Keane explained, with some congregations providing items or money to purchase gifts, while others offered volunteers to wrap each offering. We felt like it's something that we could do safely, Keane said of the parade. We know it's not really a normal Santa experience, but even so, in a challenging year like 2020, we feel it's really good to go a little outside of our comfort zone to bring blessings to others. The Now Hear This Canby team was there Wednesday night to record some of the sights and sounds. Here's a little taste of what it was like.
Coming out tonight, we have some family presents for you, and Santa is here with us, and we will be sharing those in just a moment or two. If you don't mind, would you just take a couple steps back away from each other so that we can keep everyone safe tonight? That would be great. We're going to have 1 family gift for each family. And we've got plenty to go around, so if you'll be patient with us, we'll be sure that you get a gift for your family. 1 per family. And just grateful to be here tonight. We're with the Canby Center, just behind McDonald's on 99E. And we're grateful tonight that the gifts have been provided by the community and by Canby's churches. And we've got some wonderful musicians with us tonight. We're going to do some singing, too, so thanks for being with us, you guys.
Hola, buenas tardes. Okay, so, muchas gracias por venir y estar aquí con nosotros. Tenemos regalos navideños y para ustedes. Es un regalo por familia. Adentro del regalo es, you know, varias cosas, pero son para, es para el hogar. So, si me pueden hacer un favor y se pueden poner como en una línea. Y no se olviden de mantenerse con 6 pies de distanciamiento. También tenemos voluntarios y ve que nosotros tenemos la cadena. Tenemos dulces para los niños si quieren. Y estamos muy agradecidos a las iglesias aquí en Canby por venir a ayudarnos en este desfile que planeamos como último minuto, pero sí queríamos dar el gozo de la temporada. Okay, so si puede poner en una fila, then we can go
online. And also help us out with the guest room.
Yeah.
Go back.
You guys can start giving out candy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Ellie, you see the music? Stay connected to what matters most this holiday season with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While the holidays may look different for many of us this year, you can always count on DirectLink's reliable network to keep your video calls, Snapchat, stories, and photos crystal clear. DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members this holiday season and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. For more information, visit directlink.coop. And from all of us here at Now Hear This Candy and our friends at DirectLink, stay safe, stay healthy, stay connected, and have a very happy holiday season. All right, well, on the Canby conversation today, we're going to be taking some time to remember and honor a Canby legend. It has been years since AJ Slaughter donned his signature number 4 jersey for the Canby Cougars, but his presence is still felt by those who step onto the gridiron he once terrorized as an all-state linebacker. Earning a surprising starting job as a redshirt freshman, AJ played one season for the Portland State Vikings, helping lead them to their best finish ever in the Big Sky Conference. Tragically, A.J. Slaughter died almost 5 years ago in January of 2016 of unexpected surgery complications. We are so honored to be joined today by his parents, James and Terry Joe Slaughter. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Can you guys start by telling us more about A.J., what he was like, what drove him?
Oh, let's see. What drove him? Since a very young age, right, they talk about sometimes people having intrinsic motivation and being self-driven and self-motivated.
Yeah.
And to a great extent, he always had that. He always loved to compete. He hated to lose. He hated to lose probably more than he enjoyed winning. And that aspect of kind of just a relentless determination fueled him in a lot of ways. He, not by any means, you know, not a saint. There were obviously flaws and faults as with all young men and teenage boys, he, you know, there were times where he would only need to do, let's say maybe academically, if I didn't have to work real hard to get a B, I'm okay with a B sort of thing.
Yeah.
But athletic.
That's just being smart.
Well, right. Yeah. using your, your time efficiently.
Exactly.
He was fortunate that, at least here in Canby, he grew up with a group of friends that, even to this day, that group is very, very tight-knit. And the boys especially that were in that group all loved to compete, all loved to push each other, and they all wanted to see each other succeed. And that was pretty cool to be part of as a, not only as a parent, but then when I was fortunate enough to get to coach him, I tried to stay out of the coaching part when he was younger and let other people coach him.
Yeah.
You know, on the field sort of thing. We would sometimes have talks at home about what you need to do to get better and things like that. But,
He had an interesting path, though, because his, like, athletic path was not all easy and roses.
Like, yeah.
He started off being a great little athlete, and with the coaches would, like, fight over who got to have him on his team in, like, fifth grade and sixth grade. And by eighth grade, he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't grow. He wasn't big. And he was going to quit football as a freshman.
Mm-hmm. He was 5'5", 135 pounds.
Very undersized for a linebacker.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Very undersized for anything at that
sure,
point.
Sure,
sure. We were smart enough to know these other boys. I mean, they've got man hair. They're growing. They're big and strong. And he hadn't grown yet. And Jim just kept telling them, you know, just keep your time will come. Just keep working hard. And
I would say, you know, trust me, I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to get better, and you just
Then you hope that it grows, and it does. But but he didn't quit. I think he was the only sophomore that didn't get a dress down on varsity his sophomore year.
Yeah.
But he just kept working hard, and that's I think what I'm most impressed about was his perseverance on just pushing through that when it wasn't easy.
Yeah. I never met AJ, but that was one thing that I've had so many people, especially since we started doing this podcast, so many people talk to me about AJ and the impact that his story has had and that knowing him has had on them and the community as a whole. And we're going to talk about that more. But that is one thing that has really stood out is that, his hard work. That's one thing that that one of the quotes that he's known for, right, is you can do hard things. And that his success that he had. Oh, it's right there on your sweatshirt. I love that, Terry Joe. But yeah, his success that he had, and he had enormous success athletically, but it was very much earned at a price of a lot of hard work and work in the weight room. It wasn't it didn't come very easy to him. He had to work for every bit of it.
So in a bit, you know, he didn't know anything other than an athletic family and with two parents that have a lot of coaching experience and two older sisters who were very gifted and talented in the things that they did.
Yeah.
So that was the norm for him. Part of his expectation was, well, I'm going to do these things. And this is how we in this family do these things. And so in a sense, maybe he had an advantage where some kids don't have maybe that at home. You know, I say that I'm the black sheep of the family because I'm the least accomplished of everybody else in our family athletically that has done things. And so there was something that he wanted to live up to, which also I think, you know, kind of pushed him, but
that was all him.
That was all him. Yeah. It was more of a quiet confidence and a cockiness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he also seems to have been incredibly mature for his age. I have to I've read stories about him. I'm going to read a couple of quotes here, but then I have to like pinch myself that he was only 20 when he passed away. It's unbelievable. I haven't reached the level of some of this maturity yet myself, and I'm in my 30s. But there's this article from Bob, one of his former teachers, Bob Hammett, who is a wonderful writer. I'm going to share this article in the show notes for this episode. But I wanted to share just a couple of stories that he shared about AJ in this article. This first one, he says that AJ was his teacher's aide during his senior year. He was teaching, I'll just read it in his voice. I was teaching a freshman class, and there was a young man in the class who was rather challenging. He wasn't a bad kid, just asked a lot of questions and talked a lot, always needing attention. AJ could tell when the young man was wearing down my patience and would always sense when to go over and talk to him and help him. AJ was also a basketball star, and the young man in the story went out for basketball and did not make the team. Instead, he became a team manager with the goal of making the team the next year. The young man later told me how AJ would shoot baskets with him every day before practice and help coach him. After AJ's passing, I read a huge card signed by the students at Canby High School. The young man simply signed it, "Thank you. Sorry. Thank you, AJ, for being my best friend." A lot of people would tell you that they were his best friend. By the way, that young man grew up a lot. By his senior year, he was also a classroom leader and not annoying at all. We will never know how much AJ's heart and caring towards this young man helped him, but I'm sure it was a lot. And then the second story Bob wrote, after he went to college, I got this message from AJ one night. He wrote it to thank me after he and Sam, that's his childhood friend, Sam Bodine, were arguing with some teammates about politics. It says so much about who he was, one, that he accepted coaching and teaching. He didn't really need to thank me. I'm supposed to teach people. I get paid for it. I try to teach lots of people, but not everyone accepts it. AJ embraced it. Secondly, he took the time to reach out to me to thank me. It really made my day. AJ liked making people's day with shows of appreciation and gratitude. Most importantly, it shows who he was in dealing with his teammates. He was trying to coach them, not into jumping in and agreeing with his side, but to become better by listening to the other side. Even in the midst of a heated debate with his peers, he was trying to help them improve. I just thought those stories were so cool and showed different sides, two very different and very mature sides of a young man and a young leader in his community and among his peers.
Yeah. I remember a story, I think it was in middle school, and there was a kid that no one would sit with at lunch. And he came home and he's like, "Mom," he said, "no one will sit with them." So I invited him to join our group because I didn't want him to sit alone. And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was just him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so AJ, as we mentioned in the intro, he graduated from Canby High School, went to college at Portland State, joined the football team, was a redshirt freshman, but ended up, because Sam got injured, actually, opened up a roster spot for him to jump in, and he just took full advantage of that, having an incredible season. He was named All-Conference, I believe. He was Defensive Player of the Week at one point. I wanted to ask you guys kind of what that was like as his parents to watch that unexpected early success.
Well, if you ask AJ, it wasn't unexpected.
True. Us,
I was like, oh, I don't know. That might be a little much.
Yeah.
But he was definitely undersized going into college. He was definitely at the bottom of the depth charts. And then he got sick that first spring, which is a big time to like kind of, after you've redshirted all year, it's your first spring. And he
lost a lot of weight, right?
He had abscesses like up in his palate, mm-hmm. and just got really sick. Yeah, he lost a lot of weight. He couldn't work out.
Yeah.
Dropped to the very bottom of all the depth charts and had to like kind of climb back up again. So at the beginning of that, his freshman year that he was playing, he was like, "Mom, I don't even get hardly any reps. I get like one." He goes, "But I didn't make any mistakes."
Right.
And then he would call later and he'd like, "Hey, I got in twice." And goes, and I didn't make any mistakes. I did good, but why don't I get more? And we're like, just your time will come.
Yeah.
And then a kid, one of the boys got hurt, moved him up in the depth chart. And then all of a sudden he got more reps. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, this kid, he doesn't make a lot of errors. Like, you know, he's smart with what he does. And basically he called before their very first game. He's like, Mom, holy crap, I'm starting against Washington State. Like, holy crap, it's Washington State. and he did, and he had the first tackle of the game, and it was pretty cool to see him just, again, he was kind of sitting behind, and he had to, like, kind of persevere through some of that tough part.
That first year, so he went with Sam when Sam had an official visit to Portland State, and AJ just went on his own as an unofficial visit, which means they're not paying for anything. He's just going to go on the tour and see stuff. And Sam and AJ met the coaching staff, were talking to him, and by about halfway through the visit, because I had taken them up there, so I'm just kind of tagging along, and about halfway through the visit, the coaches say to me, this is now turned into an official visit for him. And so they asked him to be a preferred freshman, so he was able to come at the start of fall and start practicing. Not all freshmen get to do that, and because of numbers and stuff. Mm. And so that first year was really tough, being on the scout team and doing that. And he was in the hospital the week before the spring game. We had taken him up to the emergency room. He was in the hospital. And he basically talked his way out of the hospital so that he could show up for that first spring game, and he got to play four plays. Wow. And so from there, he went from 17th on the depth chart to, like TJ said, by the start of the season, he was going to start. And so the night before when he called, it's about 10 o'clock. And I said, so what are you doing? And he goes, well, I'm watching film, which didn't surprise me. He and Sam, and even in high school, they would call Grant Balstead and myself early in the morning after our game Friday night, and they would have already watched our cell phone film and said, okay, here's our mistakes and here's what we got to do to get better. And now here's what we think next week's going to happen. And this is some changes. I mean, they were already scouting and thinking ahead. So he calls me and he says, I'm watching film. And I said, that's awesome. And he goes, now, if they come out on the opening kickoff and the ball's on the left hash and inside the 30-yard line, this is what they're going to run as a play. And I'm going to check us out of whatever inks, I know what the play is going to be. And, you know, with a grain of salt, I said, you know, yeah, okay, you know, don't tell me, show me.
Yeah.
And so I'm at home watching the game with Grant Balstead, who at that time was a teacher and our defensive coordinator at Canby. And
I was at the game.
And she was at the game, but yeah, we were working. And I said,
he's to not him, bitter I, about it, though.
I said to Grant this story. I told him, I said, this is what AJ said to me. And so we kick off, Portland State kicks off, they get the ball. It's son of a gun. It's on the left hash. It's inside the 30-yard line. And they come out, and here's this redshirt freshman. He's checking the entire defense out of what the call was into something else. Ball gets thrown, and he makes the first tackle. And that's when I turned to Grant, and I said, okay, I think he's got it figured out. He's going to be okay.
Wow. Well, he didn't have a lot of offers for college. I think Linfield was like the biggest one after him, which is a good program.
Linfield, Western, Southern.
But he said, this is where his quote came in. He was like, Mom, I could go to Linfield and I'm going to be $80,000 in debt automatically, no matter what. Right. I know I can go, I can play and I can do good, but I can go to Portland State and maybe earn a scholarship at least. And he goes, and if I don't, it's on me, Mom. And that's kind of where his quote came in, where he knew what he was doing, because I thought he should go to Linfield.
He took the responsibility and owned it.
Yeah.
I think it was at that Washington State game, wasn't it, Terry Joe, famous photo where he comes into the stands and gave you a hug at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, he
was actually, I think, hugged us both. My sister took a video of him coming up, and he was just like grinning ear to ear, and it was so cool. His whole team was. It was a huge win.
Yeah.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was gonna go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Well, AJ's death in January 2016 was obviously completely unexpected. It was, as I mentioned, you know, complications from tonsil surgery. It was not something that was thought to be life-threatening or that was of any concern. Just rocked our entire community. Obviously, your family as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what you remember from that time?
Nothing.
Yeah.
So.
What?
He had had a surgery on a Friday afternoon. And surgery went well.
Removed his tonsils.
There was a little extra bleeding because they had to cut a little more out than they thought. So they kept him in the hospital a little longer that day. We brought him home. And he had helped his girlfriend at the time go through. She had had her tonsils removed a little while earlier, so he'd kind of seen the process of recovery, and she had helped him, or he had helped her through that, so she was here with him. And so it gets to Saturday and he's doing a little bit better, but his throat's still, you know, pretty sore, and he calls and says, you know, should I do anything or whatever? And they said, well, you know, you're on the minimum amount of pain medication. You could take one more tablet every 8 hours sort of thing, which is about all there was. So it becomes a Sunday, and both Terry and our youngest daughter, Casey, were coaching club volleyball, and they had a tournament down in Eugene that day. And so I was home with AJ, and his girlfriend was here, and then she had left to go play in a soccer match. And we're sitting watching Sunday Night Football like we would when he was home.
Yeah.
And he had fallen asleep on the couch, and his breathing got really labored. And I thought, you know, his throat is sore. And anyway, make a long story short, I tried to wake him up. I couldn't. And
yeah, you don't have to say all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that happened that night. The Canby Fire Department, Canby Police Department were awesome in their response time and what they did.
What they tried to do,
how they took care of us and him. But the hardest phone call I've ever had to make was that evening.
Yeah. So sorry, guys.
I think I hung up on them too.
Excuse me.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we didn't know what had exactly happened.
Yeah.
We still don't know. There's no, the death certificate says pneumonia, which is, he didn't have pneumonia when, you know, going into it. So
yeah,
they don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's a basic surgery where everyone's like, oh, let's go have our tonsils out. And you don't really think twice about it. Yeah. And
young, healthy kid. Yeah. Athlete. Yeah.
Because I've been asked the doctor after the surgery and he's like, everything went great. He's like, he's going to be feeling so much better. And I was like, well, why don't you do this sooner? Like, you know, why did he have to go through this whole year? And he's like, well, it's a surgery and they have risks. And we both kind of laugh because he's through the surgery.
Yeah.
But I guess we just take for granted in any kind of surgery, you sign away all these risks. There's all these risks in them. And we do it without thinking because we just assume everything's going to be fine and it isn't always fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, AJ's story didn't end that day. His legacy has continued to inspire so many people, continued to motivate people and live in our community. I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on that as well. Maybe things that stand out to you or things that that you have seen add to your son's legacy in our community and outside of it as well.
Well, we have a t-shirt that's been making the rounds kind of around the world. That's pretty cool that Portland State made up t-shirts and then someone posted it, hey, I got AJ with me, and it kind of took off into this crazy where people bought the shirts and take them wherever they go. I don't know if you've seen the Facebook.
I have. I wanted to ask you. Yeah, all over the world. It's insane.
All over the world.
Yeah.
It's been crazy. And it was like, for me, it was so, heartwarming that people would take the time to like pack that shirt when they go on their trip and think about him and think about us and send me a picture of it. I think helped a lot. I think your biggest fear, at least, you know, is your son they're just forgotten.
Yeah.
And that has kind of helped just kind of carry it. So that's just like one little piece, but it's been really the support of that's been really incredible.
Yeah.
And that's a 31 shirt because he was 31 at Portland State, but
right.
It can be like at least his senior year, he wore number 4. And so that the football program turned into, I don't even know.
So that there's a fine line that we're very aware of not being self-serving and
because we're both coaches,
We're both coaches and work with a lot of kids. And so it wasn't something that we initiated or I initiated, but between the youth football program and the high school football program at the high school, they started a scholarship that's awarded to an outstanding senior who embodies not just athletically but academically and
character
wise some of the things that AJ tried to do. That's given out. The football program as a staff, they decide upon what player that year will wear number 4. And that's again something that I stay out of as far as
I think it's meaningful, at least from what I can tell to the kids. Like Ronan Gay got it this year.
Yeah.
And his mom said that he called her to tell her and he was crying. He was so overwhelmed with, I guess, that honor of being able to wear that number. And so that was really cool that it means a lot. And Ruby Kaiser on my volleyball team wore number 4. She actually asked me if she could wear number 4 because I was like, I don't know if I should do it. Is it self-serving to me if I do this?
Yeah.
You know, you're again kind of caught in that. But with the football team doing it, I was like going back and forth and she came to me and said, I would really be honored if I could wear number 4. So she wore number four and represented it really well.
And the drinking fountain that was put out underneath the weight room between the football field and the weight room and the basketball court, that was done by the senior class who were freshmen when AJ was a senior. So they, you know, every year the senior class gives something to the high school, a bench or whatever.
Yeah.
And their decision was that they wanted, because of the impact that he had on them as a senior when they were freshmen, wanted to do something in remembrance, which was
it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. I mean, basically, it kind of floored us, sort of thing.
So he's, I think, had a bigger impact than we think.
Well,
and more of an impact probably because of what happened.
Yeah.
I think he was having an impact in his way already, but I think with all this that happened, everyone became more aware of it.
Yeah.
Which is very unfortunate.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the first time I remember hearing about AJ was from, interviews with the football team. Bryant Rayburn talking about growing. So he was, a middle schooler and growing up, and AJ was his hero, watching him on the football field. Absolutely. And Ronan, it wouldn't have been a freshman. He would have been a middle schooler as well. But they all grew up knowing AJ, and I love what the football team does with that jersey as well. Cause it's not just like the best player. They have to, exemplify that character as well. And I think that's really cool.
Well, one of the things AJ, he was very aware of, Camby as a community, and he was very proud of being from Camby.
Yeah.
So as he got older, he wanted to do things to try to give something back, which is part of the reason that he officiated youth basketball games and youth football games and wanted to be around some of those younger kids, because somebody had done that for him when he was coming through. And so he wanted to give something like that back. And whether it had ever have happened or not, we had talked about, when his college playing days were over, he goes, Dad, I'm going to make the league. And if I don't make it as a linebacker, I'm going to learn how to be a deep snapper. And I'm going to be a deep snapper. And then when
I'm going to be a coach.
He goes, but when I sign my contract, one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to pay back my scholarship to Portland State. And he goes, that's one of the first things I want to do is give that money that they gave me to get me to where I am to help give something back. And
wow.
Not a lot of people think that way.
But,
no.
Yeah. Who knows if he would have made it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have bet against him, I guess.
I wouldn't have either. Yeah.
I would have gone all in.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you guys so much for taking time out today, taking time out of your day. I think it's so important to remember the people like AJ, people that represented the best of us. As you said, James, at the beginning of this, it's not about being a saint or being perfect, but striving to, those higher ideals. And AJ really exemplified that. And it's so obvious that he did just by the impact that he's made since he's been gone. Thank you again for your time. Is there anything else that either of you would like to say before we go?
No, I appreciate you taking the time to, get to know him and his story and doing this for him.
And
it means a lot.
I think we're fortunate. I think we're fortunate in the sense of the community that we live in, because it isn't just his mom and dad and his sisters, which, you're around a lot. But everybody in this community that poured stuff into these kids. He's not really a lap dog.
He's not really a lap dog, but he wants to be up here.
He looks a little bigger.
But poured time in. He's the dog you want if you've got a hurricane and don't want to blow away.
Yeah. For the benefit of the listeners, right here at the end of the Zoom call, we have a giant dog that appeared in the screen when Terry chose lap.
That's Kimbo.
Kimbo, okay. Sorry, James, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, just we're thankful for all the people that put time and energy into the kids in this community in a whole variety of ways. You know, and that's something that's been special about being here. I wouldn't have spent over half my life coaching here if I didn't think it was kind of a special place. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, like I said, we will share some links to some more articles if listeners want to hear more about AJ or learn more about his story. Again, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks, thank Tyler. You very much, Tyler.
The holiday season is a wonderful time of year, but it can also be stressful, and 2020 is certainly no exception. If you're feeling a little overloaded, let the Wild Hair Saloon take family meal planning off your plate. Whether the current status allows in-person dining, the masters of takeout have you covered. Ask about their family meal deal carryout special, a double portion of chicken fettuccine Alfredo, a huge Caesar salad, big enough to share, but if you don't, we won't blame you. Garlic toast and two kids' meals with cookies for only $25. Plus, their mouth-watering prime rib dinners are available Friday and Saturday nights. Open Monday through Friday, 11 to 8 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 3 to 8. Visit thewildhairsaloon.net or call to order 503-651-4273.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.